Hi everyone, Ruth here, and welcome to the Coach's Journey podcast. If you're wondering why I'm here and not Robbie, then just pop back and have a listen to episode 56. I am really excited to introduce my first interview as a co-host on this podcast. I'm speaking to the wonderful, lovely, and quietly powerful Tori Jeffers. Tori is a professional certified coach who has amassed over 1,000 hours of coaching. She draws on over a decade of leadership experience in the not-for-profit sector. Her experience leading and developing international conservation teams in challenging environments makes her well-placed to support busy leaders across all sectors. She specialises in supporting people to refind their passion, increase performance, build resilience, and protect their own well-being. Our chat includes, amongst many other things, contracting and how it is the answer to everything, the importance and difficulty of building a network, and giving yourself permission not to be busy. I love Tori's calm and considered manner. I know firsthand that she's a wonderful coach and feel that she brings a really special, nurturing energy into the coaching space. Now, I notice I say wow a lot in this interview, so I apologise in advance for that. Although, once you've listened, I'm sure you will agree that some of the stuff Tori has done is pretty incredible. So, on that note, I will now introduce you to the marvellous Tori Jeffers. Hello, Tori, and welcome to the Coach's Journey podcast.
Thanks, Ruth. Really nice to be here. Not something I thought I would ever be saying.
I know, it's crazy, isn't it, to think that like nearly 4 years ago, I remember like recommending this podcast and Robbie's work to you.
Yeah, exactly.
And now here we are.
I think it was last year. I don't know if I sent it to Robbie on LinkedIn or posted it on LinkedIn. My most listened to podcast on Spotify last year was The Coach's Journey.
Oh, that's fab. Oh, I love that. Did Robbie respond?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Good. Good. I was just about to go, didn't Robbie get back to you? Good. Yeah, because he'll have really loved knowing that, I think. Mm. Amazing. So how are you today? How's life?
Good. Yeah, the sun's been out today and I feel like that makes a difference.
Yeah.
In January as well. It's a hard month, isn't it?
It is. I mean, yeah, it is. I'm both me and my partner are doing run every day in January.
Oh, wow. How far are you running?
We only have to do a mile.
Okay.
I've been kind of doing between a mile and 2 miles every day. My partner's just been doing a mile, like literally.
That's amazing though, every day.
Yeah. But it's actually been really good because it's taken that decision making out. It's not like, am I going to go for a run today? It is, you're going for a run. It's just a matter of when.
And where? Or are you doing the same route?
No, Scott's been doing the same route, which blows my mind. And he's also doing it on like the busiest dual carriageway.
Oh, gosh.
Because it's literally outside the house and he can run to a certain point and run back and he knows it's a mile.
Okay.
Whereas I need a bit more freedom and a bit more interest. So I might go down to the canal or the park or whatever. But it has helped kind of blow the cobwebs away and keep the January blues at bay, I think.
Mm.
But it has been lovely the past few days, even though it's really cold.
Much better than that rain we had over Christmas, I think.
Yeah. So it's a good old British start to the podcast, isn't it? Talking about the weather.
Talking about the weather.
Especially when I don't think this will come out until like May, June. So maybe even later than that. I'm not sure. So, yeah.
Well, those people that are listening to it then, appreciate the sunshine and the warmth that you hopefully have.
Yeah. Oh, it's nice to think about that, isn't it? About summer and spring. Excellent. Well, let's just dive right in, I think, and start with the favourite Coach's Journey podcast question of when did you first come to coaching, or what you now know as coaching, or what you, is different to what you now know as coaching, but was coaching back then? Whatever.
Yeah, so I think really the first, my first kind of memory of being aware of what coaching was manager, my first manager in my old job. So that was in conservation. And I remember her saying to me that the board of trustees, the head of the board of trustees, wanted her to get a coach. And I was like, oh, okay. Sort of thought I knew what a coach was. And then she did get a coach, and she had, you know, a session with the coach, and I was, you know, kind of quizzing her, like, what do you do? And she's like, well, we just kind of talk. And she asked me loads of questions. I think I said something like, oh, that's weird. And then she had this, I think I still got it actually, this book of different exercises and things that the coach had given her. And she did some of them with us. So I remember, I mean, I didn't know it was called this at the time, but it was a behavioral driver's questionnaire, kind of like what motivates you. And then there was Johari's window in there somehow, which I think I mixed up with another exercise. So I kept referring to Johari's window in conversations, and she'd look at me like a little bit kind of strangely.
What's Johari's window? I've not heard of that.
Oh gosh, don't ask me. Because I still get it mixed up.
Which one of two could it be?
So I think it's the one where it's you don't know what you don't know.
Okay.
And it's the boxes.
Yes.
And the sort of known unknowns and the unknown unknowns. I think it's that one.
Okay, cool.
We can check and put it in the show notes.
Afterwards. Yeah, we can. And if it's not that, that's fine.
And then I think even before she had a coach, she was coaching me. She was using like a coaching style as my manager. And I remember sometimes finding that really frustrating.
Really?
Just because I didn't really know necessarily what I was doing quite a lot of the time. I was quite, no, I think, so I originally lived in Madagascar when I worked for that organization, which was amazing. And, you know, happy to talk more about that. But when I moved back to the UK office, it was hugely different. Much smaller team. Very quiet office, like you could hear a pin drop. And I felt a little bit scared. The person before me had been, not before me because it was a different job, but I came in knowing that a couple of people had been let go, and I was terrified that I was going to be made redundant. So I was a little bit worried about everything. And so the coaching style, I think, was great. And in hindsight, I can see exactly what she was doing. I didn't know it was coaching at the time, but she wanted me to own it and, you know, wasn't giving me answers to everything and wasn't always giving me her opinion. But I think I was maybe a bit confused by that because I hadn't really had that from a boss before. And actually, I'd love to call her up, but maybe I will do this and ask her whether she knew that she was coaching me and was meaning to coach me, you know, whether that's how she branded it at the time. I'd be quite interested to know that. But I think, you know, once I kind of found my feet and gained a bit more confidence, I think she really set the tone and kind of not built foundations, because it wasn't my first job, but I don't know, put some really important bricks into the foundations of my leadership style, very kind of like collaborative and coaching and involved. And I'm really grateful to her for that, because I didn't really know what was happening at the time, but looking back, I can really see how that shaped me as a person and also as a manager within that organization. So that's really how I first became aware of coaching, and then the sort
Sorry,
of...
I'll just stick my nose in. Would it have been helpful if you had known she was doing coaching?
Yeah, possibly. I think maybe if she'd said, you know, I'm not going to tell you all the answers, because either because I don't know them, or because, you know, I don't know whatever the reason was. So
she wanted you to find the answers for yourself, yeah. Like you said, so you can own it.
Maybe that was the reason. Maybe it's because she didn't know the answers and we had to figure it out together. I'm not totally sure. But I think maybe some indication around what was going on,
yeah,
might have settled me, is the word that's coming to mind.
Yeah, no, that's a good word.
Mm.
And also, it makes me think about, like, my supervision, which is often with Robbie. And he says, and I think he says it because somebody else says it, like, the answer to everything is always contracting.
Yeah.
So perhaps had there been some contracting, it might have been more useful. But obviously it sounds like it was really useful for you anyway.
Hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think in hindsight it was really useful for me. At the time, I think I felt quite anxious. That I wasn't doing the right thing, or
yeah,
I was going to get made redundant, or yeah.
Yeah. And I guess those open questions might have made you feel like they were setting you up to give them the wrong answer. Or maybe
yeah,
not.
Possibly. Yeah, I don't really remember the questions. Yeah.
But it's just an interesting catch, isn't it? That maybe a little bit of contracting or outlining what was going on might have alleviated your anxiety.
Yeah, which is interesting, actually, because it ties to, like, my next kind of collision with coaching, if you like.
Collision.
A good one. So I was really lucky to go on a month-long residential fellowship thing that was in America. And as part of that, we had a coach. We only saw her, like, I think two or three times, maybe. And
was that through your employer, the same employer?
It sort of. I had to apply to the organization that was hosting it, and then had to get permission from my organization. So it was kind of sponsored in the sense that they let me go, but it was, costs were covered by the other organization. Yeah, so I had a coach through that, and she was talking about contracting in the sense of some of the things that came up around me changing my management style. And it was around kind of helping people, and it's really stuck with me what she said. It was something along the lines of, what if by doing these things or helping them or trying to rescue them, you're actually being selfish and denying them a learning opportunity? And that's really stuck with me. And, you know, we talked about some things that I could do differently. And she said, well, you might need to give them a heads up about some of these things, because if you just stop doing this or you start acting like this, they're going to be a bit surprised and a bit shocked. So sort of like contracting, you know,
yeah,
setting those expectations and It's really stuck with me that, and I find it very useful when working with clients who want to change their behavior, because there's always this, I don't know if it's an assumption, or we forget that people come to expect things from us. And when we stop doing them, even if we're stopping doing something that isn't very healthy or useful, that can create a surprise.
Yeah. And also, oh, I've got two things in my head now. I need to pick which one I'm going with. I think we don't like being called selfish, do we? So sometimes that can be a really good driver and a good kind of catalyst to looking at your behaviour, in order to change it for the better. Like, oh shit, no, I don't want to be thought of selfish. I thought I was just helping them. So now actually, when you look at it that way, you're more inclined towards behaviour change. Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. I think it was obviously shocking. And it stayed with me, and it was powerful. And of course, the reason I was, you know, taking on work or helping them out was to try and be helpful, but actually long term, maybe not so helpful.
Yeah. And the other thing that was in my head, is that a question you have since asked? Or is that an idea that you have since posed to your client?
Yes.
Yeah. With good results.
Because I sometimes feel a bit uncomfortable with saying the word selfish, like you say, it's quite shocking, feels a bit confrontational. I tell them the story.
Yes.
You know, a coach once said to me, because I was displaying these behaviors, is it possible that you're being selfish and denying them a learning opportunity? And then, you know, what does that mean for you? Or does that resonate with you? And that seems to introduce the idea differently. But then, you know, it stuck with me because it was shocking. I wasn't upset by it, but it was surprising. So actually, maybe I'm doing them a disservice by by softening it.
Yeah, maybe. But I think it's the power of storytelling, isn't it? And it's also interesting, now I'm being too much of a coach, but that was then highlighted to you that actually if you're going to change your behaviour, you need to explain what you're doing. But we were just talking about your previous boss who perhaps hadn't explained what she was doing. So I just kind of draw parallels there. But I'm not letting you get away with not telling us about Madagascar. What were you doing in Madagascar?
In simple terms, I was teaching community members. So this is southwest Madagascar. Very, very poor communities, in the sense of, like, you know, financial terms, they're sort of rich in many other ways, but a sort of hand-to-mouth existence. Most of them didn't own a mobile phone at that point, but I was teaching them to use smartphones, very basic smartphones.
What year was this?
This was 2014.
Okay.
So there was very little internet coverage, but basically using smartphones to record data on sharks that had been caught. So I helped design the sort of the app that was collecting that data, and then was helping to sort of train community members and change the app to deal with various different things to make it sort of user friendly for them. So really, really unexpected things, like because they had been fishing for many years, many of them had lost the feeling in the ends of their fingers.
Oh, wow.
So they couldn't tell, you know, whether they were pressing the screen properly. So we sort of put on the haptics and things so that they could tell when they'd press the buttons and things. So those are things like that, getting them little stylos that they could use and sort of workarounds for that. So yeah, I lived in Madagascar for a year, right on the beach in a hut with a hammock and a bucket for a shower. And I had lots of cockroaches in my hut. I once had a rat in my bed.
Oh my, no, not
which
rats.
Which is a whole other story.
I can't
story.
Do rats. Wow. And were you living there by yourself or with a few people from this? Was it a charity, conservation
yeah,
charity?
So it was Blue Ventures that I was working for. And there was other staff located there, but it was also the site of one of their overseas expeditions. So like students or gap year students could come and do some diving and survey the reefs and collect fisheries data. So I was living in the same place as them. So yeah, there was staff, international staff and Malagasy staff there, and then these volunteers as well, and obviously the community members.
Did you ever go home, or were you just there solid?
I came home, so I went out in the September and I came home the following, I think it was May or June, for a wedding, and then I went back. So I came home once in that year basically.
So how did you find that?
So it was after my master's.
What was your master's in?
My master's was in conservation and biodiversity. So I originally studied geography at undergraduate, and then I ended up in sort of events and sort of project management roles for different charities. But my kind of dream job had always been something environmental, something conservation-y, and I just kind of got stuck. So after sort of 5-6 years of doing that, after I graduated, I worked for three different companies, three different charities, I left my job. I went traveling for a bit, did some volunteering on a couple of different projects. One was a sea turtle one. We're collecting sea turtle eggs and sort of incubating them, or you're protecting them from poachers. Wow. And the other one was in the Amazon, and completely different. We were sort of surveying frogs at night and monkeys in the day, completely cut off, no internet, no way of getting in contact with anybody. And then traveled a bit more around Central and South America. And then I came home and started my master's. And it was off the back of that that I found this job. So my supervisor for my dissertation was supervising my manager for her PhD. And he knew my strengths and knew my interests, and he put us in touch. And so I had an interview with them and then got sent out to Madagascar.
Hi, everybody. I'm Robbie. I'm the creator and founder of The Coach's Journey, and I've just got one quick thing before we get back to the show. As part of our commitment to keeping episodes like this free so we can support you and coaches like you, we'd like to ask something of you. Wherever you're listening to this show, please click subscribe or follow for The Coach's Journey. That's a free way of supporting the show and helping us continue to support you and other coaches. Thanks in advance for subscribing or following, and if you want to hear about other ways to support The Coach's Journey, then listen all the way to the end of this episode or visit www.thecoachesjourney.com.
And was it, obviously, aside from cockroaches and rats, like, how did you cope with that? I can't think of the word. Solitude. Was it solitude?
Yeah, Interesting question, actually, because I wasn't by myself and I had lots of people around me. I made really good friends with someone that was doing like a medic placement as a medic. So she's training to be a doctor, and she was out there for 6 months and we became really good friends. And I saw her the other weekend, actually. We're still in contact like 10 years later. And so I had friends, but also I was surrounded by volunteers who would change kind of every 6 weeks. And so there's sometimes when I felt really lonely. And it was one of those times where you realize that you can feel lonely when you're surrounded by people. And I think it was quite hard. So I was doing long distance with my partner.
So you had a partner at home?
Yeah.
Wow.
And he came out for Christmas and to celebrate my 30th birthday. And we traveled around with some of the other staff, and that was really nice. But, you know, there'd be times when I'd be staying up till like midnight or 2 o'clock to try and get a tiny glimpse of video, because the internet was so terrible when I lived there. You know, we could message, and Skype was the thing then. Trying to get a Skype connection in my bug net, just for that tiny little glimpse of video. So it was hard. And I originally only signed up for 3 months, I think it was, because a year felt too long. That feels like a long time. But then I extended to 6 months, and then extended to 9 months, and then extended for the year, and then I was ready to come home then.
Yeah.
I definitely built up quite a, I don't know if hard exterior is the right word, but almost, I think I described it at the time as almost like the shell of a beetle.
Yeah.
I didn't kind of realize that I'd built up these defenses until I came back and started to kind of shake them off a little bit.
Yeah.
I think it's just that always kind of watching your back, always being a little bit out of your comfort zone, not really speaking the language, often being the only white person in the room or on the bus or in the village. Solitude is a good question.
Yeah. And I guess part of that kind of beetle skin, beetle shell has to be kind of made up of not thinking about missing people back home, and not thinking about I guess I'm a bit of a home bird, so that's what's kind of top of my mind when I think about it. But certainly for me to be apart from family, friends, especially a partner, that just feels like such a big deal. So, yeah, I'm just wondering, was that part of the beetle shell?
Yes, probably. Yeah, I think there's some kind of defences that you build in that kind of situation.
Yeah. Because you could dwell on it, but then your time there, it's going to impact on your time there, and it's not going to enable you to get the best out of it, is it? Wow.
I think, you know, part of it as well was, so I was friends with this medic, and she was working in the health centre and the hospital, and obviously sort of was in touch with what was going on from a health perspective. And a lot of it was bad news. People dying from unexpected things, unknown things, people dying in labor, like all kinds of things that
we don't have to deal with.
Yeah, we don't have to deal with. We take for granted that, you know, I think when I was, I think it was either a week or 2 weeks after it arrived, one of the local field staff died. He'd swallowed a fishbone, and I think it had like ruptured some kind of ulcer or something in his stomach. Nobody really totally knows. And so I was invited to his funeral.
Wow.
And I had to go because I was a member of staff. And I've never experienced such raw emotion. The obviously people are grieving, but they were very outwardly grieving, and this ladies wailing and lots of crying, and I was just bawling my eyes out. I didn't know this guy. I obviously had lots of empathy for everyone that did know him, and family and staff, everyone very close to him, but something just really hit a nerve. And I can't describe it. It was just such raw emotion. And so I think this kind of, you know, there was a lot of death to deal with, basically, like very deprived in a healthcare sense community. And part of that exterior was to cope with that, I think.
Yeah. Which is totally understandable.
Yeah, sort of how do you, that balance between empathy and getting pulled under.
Yeah, and sanity.
Mm.
Mm. And also, I guess, when you talk about the funeral, that's all really not British, isn't it?
Mm.
You know, just genuine outpourings of raw emotion.
Mm.
You know, we're not the best at that, are we?
No.
As a culture. And I think it's hard to imagine what being surrounded by that must be like.
Mm.
And I guess it then, like you said, it just tapped into something in you and enabled that to come out.
Mm.
Wow. I mean, there's so much there. I'm totally fascinated. I could talk about Madagascar. And then the turtles. Where were you with the turtles?
That was in Costa Rica.
Wow.
Yeah, so we were doing beach patrols at night, looking for turtles coming in, laying eggs to then collect the eggs and sort of rehouse them, if you like, in a protected area.
Okay.
Mm.
So you come back from Madagascar with your beetle shell. Is it a shell? I don't know. It's
yeah,
not a shell, is
shell.
It?
Yeah, beetle there. Shell.
And then, then just fill in the gaps, because that was before you first came across coaching, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I came back from Madagascar, started the job with Blue Ventures. No, sorry. I came back from Madagascar where I'd been working for Blue Ventures, and then started in the UK office working with them, which is when I then came across
coaching.
Yeah. Although I was thinking about this, and actually it was probably it must have been like my 11th or 12th birthday. I've still got the book, actually. I should have checked. I got, for my birthday, I got an MBTI Myers-Briggs type indicator book.
Wow. From who?
It's from my like godparents. It's a very random thing to receive. And I don't know why they got it for me. I know that I was always into kind of personality tests and things, but I don't necessarily know that they knew that. I think it was just a really kind of off the wall present, but yeah, I was fascinated by it. I remember doing it with my mom and like
I think 12-year-old me would have quite liked that. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you do all of those quizzes that you used to get in magazines?
Yeah.
What's your love language? And
yeah. Who's your celebrity boyfriend?
Yeah.
Do you like kisses on the beach? Kisses on the street? Yeah. Yeah, you'd always got to do the quizzes.
Yeah. I just remember always being fascinated with those things. Yeah, and I've still got the book.
And are you still the same Myers-Briggs that you were when you were 12?
I don't think so. I'd have to check what I've probably written notes in it, haven't I? I should have checked before.
Oh, yeah.
I should have done. But I did it probably about 2 years ago, and I came out as on the line between. Oh, I can't remember. Is it P and J? I don't know. I was like right on the cusp. I did it with Kerry, actually.
Oh, did you? I've not done it like properly, but I came out as Imp J, which is supposed to be really rare. But then I've just been coaching a couple of people who were both Imp J.
I think I was on the cusp of like Imp J and Imp. Is it P that's opposite J?
Yeah, possibly. Judge, because J is for judgment, isn't it?
P for...
So what's P for perception, maybe?
Perception, I think. Or yeah. Perceiving.
Yeah, and these two people who were Imp J were on a course where everyone else in their, on their course, or like the majority of them on their course was Imp J.
Well, must attract like a certain personality type.
Yeah. And
I thought you would have been E.
Well, I know, and I really struggle with that because I actually think I'm an ambivert.
Yeah, okay.
Which obviously there's no room for that in Myers-Briggs. So I did struggle picking like with those questions, but it just so depends for me on who I'm with.
Mood.
But also like, I can be extrovert, but I do find prolonged periods with a lot of people really draining. And I'd probably, yeah. So I, you know, it's not infallible, is it? Is that the right word? But I can't believe you got a Myers-Briggs book when you were 11 or 12. So that's like your first experience of being self-aware and of kind of deconstructing others, maybe.
Yeah. I like the way you put that.
Oh, did you?
I'll take it.
You can have it. Okay. So after your initial experience with coaching, then kind of what brought you to this point?
So then that coach that I worked with a little bit, the one that told me I could be selfish, some of my sessions were quizzing her about being a coach, or not necessarily quizzing her, but I mentioned it's something that I was thinking about. Because I've always been interested in sort of helping professions. I remember, I don't know if they still do them now, but did you have at school that sort of like career counsellor who would make you do some questionnaires and then they'd say, okay, you should be a doctor or you should be a social worker? And I think I came out with sort of like social work was in there. I know that I was really interested in counselling for a while. You know, but that said, I did want to be a lawyer at one point. So there's definitely things flipped around. But those helping professions kind of really did interest me. So it's interesting that, you know, I went into conservation. Yeah, I went into conservation. That was about helping the planet, helping people to help the planet. And that, you know, I described that as my dream job.
Your careers advisor was obviously better than mine. Mine told me to go and be a travel rep.
Oh, but I think you would have been a good travel rep, you know.
Well, I would have been, but I went in there and clearly told them that I wanted to be a performer and an actor. And I think they were just trying to manage my expectations. It's like, no, 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 you can't do that, love. Go and be a travel rep. So I took my bat and ball home then. Sorry, yeah, your careers advice was a lot more nuanced and helpful, I think, by the sounds of it.
I don't know. I think it was just a bog standard questionnaire. But so conservation was my dream job. I got there, worked my way up through the organization, but after 6 years, I just knew that I needed to leave. The organization was changing. It just didn't fit anymore. And that coincided with COVID, and it just felt like I was in the wrong place. And various other things going on just meant it was time to leave. And so I'd been talking to this coach when I was away, and she said quite clearly, make sure you build a good network before you leave. You need a good network. Don't leave without having a good network. Did I then invest a year in building a network? Not really. Did I really take her advice? Not really. Do I regret not taking her advice? Probably.
Okay. Well, we're gonna put a pin in that. We're gonna come back to that.
But that was when I first kind of voiced it as an idea, and then I went back. I had another year at Blue Ventures, you know, some new tools and tricks up my sleeve, some new energy, some new wind in my sails. And then this kind of idea came to fruition. I started looking for places to train, and finally settled on Barefoot and started retraining before I left.
What made you choose Barefoot? And where else did you look?
So the honest answer is price and availability and speed.
Yeah,
I think, like, I obviously looked at reviews. I talked to another coach who I ended up having at the end of my time with Blue Ventures, and she sort of recommended some places. I think she might have said Blue Ventures, or on my journey looking at these other ones, it came, not Blue Ventures, Barefoot, it came up in my research, and they just seemed to be really good training body, had lots of recommendations, and seemed to cover, there was a variety of things that they seemed to look at. Some of the others that I looked at would just teach one model or have one way of doing it, or the sort of more academic ones took a long time and didn't feel quite as practical as I wanted. Others looked really, you know, quite good as well, but didn't have availability, or it was going to take 18 months to retrain, and I just wanted to get on with it, really. And I'm very glad I did, because I did love my Barefoot experience. Yeah,
and that's, and where course, we
that's
met.
How we met.
Yeah, I loved my Barefoot experience too, and obviously it's amazing that I got to meet you and lots of other people that I'm still in contact with. So you was, I'd forgotten that you were still working when you started Barefoot.
There was only an overlap of when did we start? August. And I left in the September, so there wasn't much overlap. I was still working.
Yeah, so you went to Barefoot, and then what happened?
And then,
oh, okay, well, let's rewind.
Yeah, go on.
To why you wish you had spent longer building your networks.
Oh, it's just so important, isn't it? And I think I did a little bit before I left, trying to sort of reconnect with people. But I think I wish I was better at telling people what I was doing without needing a reason to talk to them. I find that a reason to talk to
just
someone
slow difficult. Down. Come on, Coach Reese is here again. Say it again. You wish it was easier to talk to people
without
about what you do.
Yeah, or finding a reason to talk to people.
Right.
Because just saying, hey, do you fancy a coffee?
With no reason, or
with someone that you haven't spoken to for a while.
Okay.
Still feels a little bit awkward.
Okay. Yeah. I've got lots going around in my head at the minute because
spill it. Come on, spill it out.
Well, no, just because and it's interesting. I think it's about 5 or 6 episodes ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be a really bad host now and not remember. No, I'm going to look it up so I don't. It was one of, about 5 or 6 episodes ago on this podcast, Robbie interviewed somebody called Lindsay Lewis. And it's an absolutely brilliant episode, and it really made me think about this. So it's episode 47. And I've also talked a lot to Robbie about this. And it's like that's a muscle to flex, isn't it? Approaching people seemingly out of the blue or inviting people to a coaching conversation. But that episode is definitely worth a listen to about that kind of thing.
I haven't listened to that one yet, so well.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
How do you find it? Has it got easier for you?
It gets easier the more I do it.
Mm.
So before Christmas, I set myself the challenge that I'm going to invite 100 people to coaching by the end of February. Not necessarily to coaching, but whether to have a coffee to talk about coaching or whatever. And I find that when I'm in it and I'm on it and I'm sending them, it feels really good. And then I'm able to send more and they feel easier. But now I haven't done any since before Christmas. So going back to it feels like climbing a big mountain again. But I know that once I get there and get in it and start doing it again, that it's going to feel better and easier.
Mm. What do you say in that initial email, though? What's your hook?
It depends who I'm talking to. Like some of them was just inviting ex-clients, old clients to a chat, offering them a free coaching session. Some of it is talking to people about the work that I want to do with emerging leaders. So perhaps they have, they run a company with emerging leaders or it just depends who it is that I'm getting in contact with and what I'm getting in contact with them for. Like, is it an invite for coaching or actually is it more network building? So, I mean, as far as a hook, I try and just find something, whether it's like, it's been ages since we spoke, but I'm doing this thing and I thought you might find it interesting. Or, other times genuinely stuff might come on the telly or like one of my old clients goes wild swimming and I went down to the nature reserve around here and saw people wild swimming and it made me think of her. So then I just popped her an email saying, I was thinking about you. And then I had an amazing session with her on Tuesday about like where she's at. And she was so excited to tell me about where she's at in life and how stuff's changed for her. And it was just brilliant. So yeah, maybe it didn't create work there and then, but actually it was just a really nice thing for me to do. So yeah, that's my two penner about invitations. And I agree, it's difficult. And I've also spent a lot of years telling myself that I'm not very good at networking. And I'm really trying to undo that.
Yeah, why do we do this to ourselves?
I know, like it's so not fucking helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not good at networking in a surface. Gosh, I'm really struggling with my words today. In a surface, kind of superficial way. But, you know, making contact with that ex-client didn't feel superficial or surface or, you know, it was genuine. And I think I need to find that genuine connection, that authenticity, in order to feel like I'm staying in alignment with me and my values and truth, instead of just rocking up to a networking event being all gobby.
Yeah, so it's coming from a genuine place then, I guess.
Yeah. Sometimes, like, obviously I've got 100 to do, so sometimes it's just a real quick, you know, I'm offering you a free coaching session. Do you fancy it? And it's interesting. I was talking with someone else from the Coach's Journey community about, like, you can invest loads in like writing the perfect invitation, send it, never get a reply. You then send just one of those off the cuff couple of lines and you get a response, you know, positive response back. So it's interesting to think about, it isn't necessarily the amount of thought and work you put into an invitation that informs whether or not it's successful or not.
Yeah.
Just get it done.
That's a good tip.
I've kind of hijacked your conversation.
No, not at all.
But yeah, I mean, and it's something like me and you can have a chat about that another time.
Yeah, definitely.
Because
to pick your brain a bit more.
Yeah. Because obviously I didn't. Oh, now I'm questioning myself. Because I left, you know, my story is not dissimilar to yours. By the time I got to COVID, I realised I was burnt out. I needed to make some changes. And obviously I didn't make a concerted effort to build networks before I left my previous incarnation. But would I use those networks? Possibly. I don't know. I think maybe, oh gosh, it's so hard. I've got like three different voices in my head. I've got like Coach Ruth, podcast host Ruth, and then just me. You can tell yourself that you should have built the networks before you left your job, couldn't you? You know, I'm sure it would have been useful, but I think you'd probably still feel reluctant reaching out to them.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah,
because if you've already told yourself that you're bad at it, or yeah, barrier's still there.
So how do you, like, what do you do regarding networking, invitations, client creation?
I'm not really doing any at the moment. That's kind of my goal for this year, is to work with more people, I'm going to say privately, as in not on a platform.
Yeah, so just outline what you're doing platform-wise.
Yeah, so I'm working for BetterUp. I'm also doing a little bit of work with Know You More.
I've not heard of them.
They're based in Scotland. And I've been working on their regenerative leadership program. So as part of that, people just get a couple of coaching sessions. So that's been quite interesting. I think it's an area they want to grow. So
what do Know You More do then?
Their mission is to help people through coaching, I think. They mostly do pro bono work. But they're a coaching organization.
Okay. So you do that and you do BetterUp.
Yeah, and then also with someone else from our course, we started conservation coaching. So we work with conservation leaders through one-to-one coaching, but mostly through the leadership development program that we've put together, which is a 6-ish months program. I say 6-ish because it always ends up being a bit longer than that. But it's a combination of group coaching, knowledge sharing sessions, which are sort of like workshop training, kind of knowledge sharing, but not the traditional kind of training approach, if you like, and one-to-one coaching over that period around many of the issues, areas, interests that conservationists face. So there's a lot around burnout and well-being and resilience and building your skills and self-awareness as a leader, but also looking after yourself and thinking about how you're building that resilience and looking after your teams and those kinds of things.
Okay.
And then I've got some private clients as well who have just come to me really through word of mouth or recommendations.
But that's a side of your business you want to look at building this year.
Yeah, the sort of private side and the conservation coaching. We'd like to do more programs this year. We'd like to do some open programs. We've done a few programs that are just with one organization. So we'd like to have a program that brings people from different organizations, because I think there's a huge amount of learning that can be done there as well.
Yeah.
So we'd like to grow that this year as well.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously your experience of burnout will inform that, and you know, I guess you've got useful learnings to share with people who are in similar situations to what you used to be in.
Yeah, the I think the pivotal moment for me was realizing that I was kind of going down the burnout track. It's not really something that was being kind of bandied around so much at that time. It's kind of everywhere now, isn't it? Burnout and there's another phrase, but I think burnout means different things to different people. Mm. Some people use it as, I'm feeling a bit stressed this week and I really need a day off, and others really like, I can't get up in the morning kind of burnout. And I think I was probably somewhere in the middle. I'd become very, very jaded, very cynical, like what had been my dream job, but now was sort of thinking, well, what's even the point in doing this work? It's kind of pointless. Yeah. Nothing's happening. We're not having any impact. I'm not making any difference. And I remember very distinctly a sort of a mini epiphany. And it happened to be, I was in the bath and I had my phone because we take them everywhere. And I came across the 12 stages of burnout.
Oh, I don't think I've seen that.
Haven't you? That sort of talks about the different behaviours that you might be displaying or things that you might be experiencing. And suddenly everything made sense. Because up until that point, I'd sort of been thinking, like, what's wrong with me? This was supposed to be my dream job. Like, why, you know, why am I feeling like this? What, yeah, really thinking, what's wrong with me? And suddenly everything made sense. Oh, okay, that's why I'm feeling so angry about that. Or
yeah,
that's why I'm feeling so frustrated about that. That's why I feel like this is maybe pointless in some ways. You know, that's too strong a word, but definitely questioning not questioning my worth, but questioning, well, I'm probably questioning my worth as well, but separate thing. Questioning my, I've totally lost the word now.
Efficacy?
Questioning, yeah, like impact, I think, impact. And impact's just become a word that's just so important to me. What is the impact that I'm having? What's the point in this? Are we spending money wisely? Are we helping the people that we really need to be helping? What's the impact and what's my impact? And I really felt that I wasn't having the impact that I wanted to be having due to various different politics within the organization and different other things going on. But sort of as I'd moved, you know, from Madagascar up the hierarchy of the organization, away from that kind of hands-on field impact, I found a new level of impact in working with the teams that I was managing. And I was managing people all over the place, Belize, East Timor, Indonesia. And I sort of, you know, ended up coaching them in some way, because I didn't always know the answer. And so taking on some of that I learned from my boss, you know, asking questions, trusting them, trying to do that. And, you know, looking back, probably wasn't really coaching, but it was a coaching style. And that sort of collaborative and trusting approach is how I wanted to be as a manager. And more and more, due to other things going on and micromanagement and stuff, that was becoming harder. And that was really clashing with my values as well. It was like pushing me into a place and a person that I didn't want to be. And I thought, well, actually, I'm really enjoying working with these teams. I really enjoy, like, and I would have called it at the time, helping people, supporting
their development. Which, of course, we'd never do now.
Which we never do anymore. you know, supporting their development and supporting them. And I sort of thought, well, if I can do this through developing my coaching skills and helping others to avoid all of these things that I've gone through, that feels like a good impact for me. That feels like a good place to be. If I can help others amplify their impact, that would feel like I'm having
impact.
More of an impact in conservation, because I'd lost my energy, I'd become very jaded. And so I thought, well, how can I have an impact again? It's like this impact word is.
And does that impact word, it's interesting, like when you started talking about that, like I felt that energy and that importance. So I'm guessing that's still really, you know, the need or the desire to create effect, impact, still really informs your work, like the work you're doing as a coach, the work you're doing with your creative coaching, not creative, sorry.
Conservation.
Thank
coaching.
You.
Yeah.
Conservation, coaching, leadership course. Like it feels that's kind of really important.
Yeah, that's where I think it's where my passion comes in as well. That like passion to make a difference and passion to have an impact, that word again. And I think
I felt that passion when you were talking about impact. Definitely. Yeah.
I think, you know, that's what prompted me to start conservation coaching, this month long, you know, residential leadership development thing that I went on was really eye-opening for me. And I wanted to take some of those learnings and learnings through kind of my mistakes as well. I think there wasn't necessarily that much, well, there wasn't really any training or support until that point. And it was the first time that we sort of started talking about, or that I really started to think about other people's drivers and, you know, emotional intelligence, managing emotions, thinking about how to influence and influence others.
Yeah.
And the sort of all of the politics of everything that was going on and how to use self-awareness and awareness of others to sort of navigate through that. It's not about manipulating people, it's about coming across in the way that you want to in order to get what you need. That makes sense.
I think we tend to shy away from that word, like influencing, don't we? And because I think of the connotations with social media that it has and stuff. But actually, you know, it's just about communication, isn't it? And communicating effectively with people in order for them, like, sounds bad, like to get them to do what you want, but essentially, you know, that can be the goal sometimes, or just to actually create the situation in which they're going to want to do that thing, whatever it is.
Yeah, and I think communication is so key. I think so many of our conflicts, issues, challenges come from, there's always like communication at the root.
Yeah, what's not been said. Yeah.
Not feeling heard, not feeling valued. Yeah. And I was thinking, oh, I wonder if Ruth's going to ask me what books or people have been influential. And Nancy Klein, I think I wish I'd known about Nancy Klein's Time to Think when I was in an organization. Because I think if I could have taken some of those techniques of really just listening, like giving people the space to talk, taking it in turns to talk, such simple, basic
things. So simple.
That we should be doing, like how to manage a meeting. Just, I think would have just made such a difference. So, you know, trying to bring some of those hindsight learnings in many ways to other conservation professionals so that they can feel supported and heard and normalize some of the stuff that they're going through.
Yeah, and perhaps have those resources and those ideas earlier on in their careers than what you had, to then avoid the burnout and avoid the difficulties. I mean, obviously, leadership's never going to be straightforward, is it?
No.
But I think having those tools and resources in your back pocket earlier on is definitely going to help.
And giving yourself permission not to be busy. I think there's a lot of busyness for busyness' sake,
and it all, busy work.
Yeah, although it might not, that might not be conscious. Yeah, busy work. Like, oh, I'm so, I've answered 100 emails today. I'm so busy. But what impact have you had? Like, what's actually come out of that?
Has that moved the needle at all? Inevitably, if it's email based, no.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think my cousin has recently been promoted into a more strategic role in housing. And she's really embraced that idea that, you know, in order to be effective in the role that she's in, the busy work has to stop.
Yeah.
If she's doing this bigger picture thinking, you know, running around chasing people for this or answering these emails, it's not going to help that happen. She's uber wise and she's, you know, managed to come to that by herself, but I think come to that decision by herself. But I think especially, you know, if you're being promoted on the strength of the quality of your work, there's something about, well, I need to keep doing that thing. But actually, maybe that isn't the thing that you need to keep doing now. It's about a new challenge and a new outlook.
Yeah, and I love working with people on that transition as well. That, you know, where they're stood and they're in that new position, but they haven't quite let go or realized that they can let go of the busyness, because they've always been measured by the busyness or measured their worth,
their success by
their
that.
Success, yeah. By the busyness, and actually need to let go of that to be successful in that, you know, that step up.
Yeah.
And I really love that, you know, trying to get them to see it's okay to let go of the busyness. You've got to let go of the busyness. There's bigger things for you.
Get out your bloody email. Similarly, I love the work I do with emerging leaders and kind of giving people the permission to be their own, you know, have their own leadership style, and that it doesn't have to be this way or that way or, yeah.
I worked with one lady. She was she just moved into like quite a senior role. She'd been senior for a while, but she hadn't been directly managing teams. And then she changed organizations and got this senior role. And I think it was the first or the second session we did values together. And it was life changing for her. Mm-hmm. Like that's what she said, because she suddenly realized that she could be herself as a leader. She didn't need to be anybody else.
Yep.
She could just be herself, and that was okay. It was okay not to be like Mr. Jones or whoever she thought this like template of leadership was.
Yeah.
She could be herself, and that was okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's some of my favorite work. For sure.
Doesn't always come along that often. I don't know, but when it's there, it's just so nice to be a part of.
Because I do think there's this very real still, and obviously I'm interested to hear what you think about this, you know, image of a leader being a strong, unemotional, white, middle-aged man who is never wrong, who never asks for help.
Doesn't empathize.
Doesn't really have to show much care and compassion to people, and who always knows the answer. And it's just so amazing when I have those conversations with people about that isn't actually what leadership is. That still, you know, women in their early 20s, mid-20s, still see that as what leadership is. Blows my mind. And these are like shit hot young women who could fucking run the world with their little finger. You know, why do they still think that that's the thing? And I'm sure that isn't the case for everybody, but, you know.
I see it quite a lot, yeah. I was working with someone recently who, young, 20-something, 20 probably nothing, female, in her first role. And we were looking at her insights profile, and she was kind of disappointed that she didn't have much red. We unpacked that a little bit, and it was to do with this idea of leadership being, you know, that that red profile of insights, like directive and go-getter and, you know, whatever else it says in the list of things. And then I got her to define what these other things were. And she basically said, she basically defined leadership. I was like, yeah. Well, what you've just said is the definition of leadership. It would be so nice if we could just let go of that, I don't know, that like cutout of Mr. Leader.
Yeah. Yeah. Mr. Leader, Mr. White, middle-class, middle-aged leader. Well, we could, I'm sure we could talk about that for hours.
We could have a whole podcast on this,
yeah, I think. Yeah. Maybe that'll be our round two, Tori. Okay. So do you want to just talk about kind of, I mean, we have already talked a bit about where you are now. Yeah, like where you are now, where do you want to go? Like what, how do you see the coaching industry? I don't know. Just really small questions, you know?
Really small questions, yeah. Where am I now? So when did we finish our course? 2020.
November 2020.
Like, yeah, so just over three years.
Yeah.
Of coaching.
You've now got your PCC. I'm going to say it because I know what you're like. You need to skim over that.
Yes, I've got my PCC.
I have coached you in the past on your reluctance to accept your achievements and successes. Yeah, your PCC, which is amazing. How many hours is that?
I think you need 500 for PCC. Yeah, I think I'm at 1,000 now.
Wow. Stop saying it like that. I think I'm at 1,000 now. Yeah, go me. Wow, that's some achievement, Tori.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't have done it without BetterUp, and I'm very, very grateful for the clients that I get through them. I think, you know, that the coaching industry is changing because of these sort of, let's go ahead and call them market disruptors, like BetterUp. I think that there is a change.
In what way?
Well, I think coaching is becoming more accessible. And that probably means several things. Maybe, I don't know whether that means it will be more or less saturated. I'm not sure, or there'll be more demand potentially.
Both, maybe.
Yeah, both, maybe. I think, you know, I was going to say obviously, but maybe it's not obvious. I could charge more for my time outside of BetterUp than what I get paid through BetterUp. And then I get more, it's easier for me to find clients through BetterUp.
Yeah.
So there's very much lots of pros and cons. I know there's probably quite a lot of worry within the industry about these sort of platforms cheapening coaching or taking away clients or, you know, reducing the going rate or something. I'm quite conscious of that.
Do you think that's true?
I don't know. I don't think I have a broad enough view across the coaching industry to know what's going on. Maybe that's another interesting podcast for us, like bring some people together and have a chat about it and see what people think from different pockets. But because I didn't, you know, it's not like we were coaches in like the good old days or whatever.
Yeah,
someone that's a seasoned coach would say. And I haven't worked with big corporations privately. So I don't know whether that work is going away or dwindling. I haven't been in that side of the market in order to see the trends. But I do see the benefits of making coaching more accessible. You know, I've been able to work with such a broad range of people through BetterUp, from graduates like in their first role and still doing their degree to, you know, C-suite in organizations. And I think just being able to work with that breadth of people has been so interesting, and the fact that a graduate can access coaching for 6 months and have a weekly session if they wanted to is such an amazing resource to have for your staff. And to get that choice of coaches. I don't know where I was going with this.
I think I was just trying to get your opinion on, you know, are platforms like BetterUp devaluing coaching? I mean, I just don't think they do. And I think it's horses for courses. And the more that coaching is available, the more people experience it, and then the more people realize its power, and then more people will want it. I think, you know, there's definitely something about looking at it from an abundancy mindset versus a scarcity mindset. And not everybody's got access. Not everybody works for a company that can employ BetterUp.
Yeah.
Not everybody, you know, I just think there's so many different ways and means for people to access coaching. And I just always come back to my dad's old adage, which will probably take a minute to sink in, that the best place to build a piano factory is next door to a piano factory.
Why?
Tori's looking very very lost now, as I'm sure you all are. Well, because if you want to go and buy a piano,
okay, go to the piano factory, and now you've got two to choose from. And also you can see what next door's piano factory are doing.
Yeah. I just think, and like you say, I haven't got any evidence. We'd have to spend ages collating evidence from, you know, like you say, the good old days, whatever they were, you know, that we don't know about. You'd have to collate data from that, with data from now, with data from private coaches, but like my rates as a private coach fluctuate depending on who they're for. So, and then as well, there's AI thrown in, isn't there? But don't tell me that, you know, people are going to rather have a computer coach them than a person. They're just not. And I'm sure that it could work, you know, on a very basic level. But nothing can replace two humans sat in a room or on a call exchanging ideas and creating a coaching engagement together. So I'm remaining optimistic about the future of the coaching industry. Well, because if not, we're buggered, aren't we?
I'll be interested to see what AI brings, actually. Because I can imagine in many ways, you know, the algorithms would be much better at spotting slight changes in body language or changes in voice tone, and, you know, literally from an analytical perspective.
Yeah, they'd be good at like picking up if you're using the same word. And but, and I'm sure it will have its uses. But I don't really know how helpful it is to be threatened by it. But maybe that's just my heart-led way of not dealing.
Only the future will tell. I don't
dealing
know
with
either.
The truth. I don't know. Yeah.
I know that BetterUp have, you know, started using it for automated messaging and things like that, but I haven't really explored it that much.
Yeah. Well, I don't really want to finish on AI, but I am I am conscious of time.
Yeah, I'm good for time though. So if you want to,
okay, all right. So we don't have
not
to
finish on AI.
Okay,
that's totally fine.
So I asked sort of where you are now, and then we got a bit waylaid.
How did we end up at AI?
Oh, because it's my brain, isn't it? because I kind of talked about the future of coaching, the coaching industry. Like, is there anything else you want to say about that or no?
No.
Just think about piano factories, right? It's going to be fine. And you've talked about like what you'd like to do more of this year, being more private clients, more of your conservation coaching leadership group, and opening that out to multiple organisations as opposed to just putting it into one. So where can people find out about you? Let me do that bit so then I don't forget.
So they can find me on LinkedIn, search for Tori Jeffers. I think my websites are linked from there. There's also a conservation coaching page on LinkedIn that you can have a look at. We've got a website, which is conservationcoaching.com. And I am on Instagram, but I don't really use it very much for coaching. I use it more for some other things that I do. Yeah, LinkedIn's probably the best way to find me.
Yeah, okay. And I've just remembered the other thing that you do is that you're a self-taught silversmith.
Yeah.
And you make gorgeous jewellery.
Thank you.
You've inspired me. I now collect sea glass everywhere I go.
Do you?
And I'd forgotten to tell you that. Yes.
What's the best bit that you found?
They're all very little. But the best place was Tynemouth.
Okay.
In the northeast. And there was just loads. And it was just, I happened to be there when I didn't have loads of time.
Oh.
And I could have just spent all day there picking up sea glass.
Is Tynemouth near to Seaham? Near to sort of...
It's near Whitley Bay in Newcastle.
Yeah, I think it's that same stretch of coast. There used to be a big, at least one anyway, glass factory up there, and they used to dump all the waste.
I think Seaham's not far. I'm going to have a look now.
Durham, that's what I was going to say. It's not too far from Durham.
No, it's not far from Durham. But Seaham, yeah. Seaham is on that coastline, further up towards Sunderland. Yeah. It's certainly not out of the question that that stuff could have ended up there. Yeah. Amazing. So how do you combine that with your coaching? Or don't you? Or does
it depend? I don't really. I'm doing sort of less of the jewellery now. I'm trying to pick and choose what I do, doing a few commissions, making an engagement ring at the moment, which is very exciting. More of a creative outlet and sort of a mindful activity. So I taught myself when I had actually some time off work with stress, and it was sort of my way back to wellness, I suppose, was through this sort of creative activity. So having to make things takes the fun out of it. So I was supplying different shops and things, and I just found that I was starting to resent doing it or dread doing it, and I thought I need to sort of take a step back from this a little bit and re-find that joy that made me start in the first place, and sort of almost re-find a hobby in it.
Yeah, I could totally understand that. Because if you had to do a certain number of a certain thing, you'd just grow to hate it, I guess. Yeah. I had another good question then, and I can't remember. Oh, yeah. So I guess, you know, you just said that was like your journey back to wellness. And again, that's stuff that you can feed into that leadership training, isn't it? Kind of maybe encouraging people to find that thing that might relax them, that might be a creative outlet.
Yeah, it's so important to find that time for yourself. When you feel that you don't have time for yourself is when you really need to make that time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think, you know, especially working from home, it's very easy to roll out of bed, not have a shower, not have breakfast, not have anything to drink, and hop on a Zoom call or whatever, Teams call, and then realize it gets to lunchtime and you're still in your PJs and you haven't had anything to eat. Sort of need to take a bit of a look at your life at that point, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's that thing about, and I say this quite a lot to clients, that they say if you haven't got time to meditate 15 minutes a day, you should be meditating half an hour a day.
Yeah, exactly that sentiment, yeah.
And I think, again, still, why is it still there? Why is it still pervasive? This kind of, you know, Brené Brown calls it wearing burnout as a badge.
A busyness badge or burnout badge, yeah.
Like, it's not cool that you've got to lunchtime and you've not got dressed, you've not brushed teeth because you've just been working. You know, that's not proof of success. But there is still that outlook in places. And I think people still, some people, not everybody, and obviously I'm making a lot of sweeping generalizations here. You know, there's something about talking about how busy you are shows how important you are.
Yeah. It's that value as well. I'm so busy, I'm so needed, therefore I'm valuable.
I'm valuable, I'm important, I have worth. And like for me, the Brené Brown thing of like, don't attach your worth to how much you got done today. I struggle with that every day.
Yeah, totally.
Even with what I preach, and what I read, and what I, you know, and what I know, we still, and I do think it's more present in women, although that's, you know, I'm not saying it's not in men. You know, I fight every day not to attach my worth to what I've ticked off on my bloody to-do list.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, back to what you said about impact, if I can just remind a few people of that, and if I can help a few people come to the conclusion of that, then those are some good ripples, aren't they?
Yeah, I think we forget to question things as well. Sort of, why is that on my to-do list? Why am I going to that meeting?
Yeah.
Why am I answering that email? And we sort of, we go rather than thinking about where we want to get to, maybe. And I think going back to burnout, it's a really sneaky little monster. It creeps up on you, and I think lots of people are talking about burnout at the moment, and I feel like it's being bandied around.
Yeah,
in the sense of like, oh, it was really traumatic, and those kinds of like quite serious words that get misused.
I didn't even really know I was burnt out.
Exactly.
Until
afterwards.
Probably like by the time I had to close the business for COVID, I was definitely burnt out, but I did not realize it.
Mm.
I don't think I realized it for another year. So that's after I'd done my coaching qualification. Like, it's just looking back on it.
Mm.
And realize that you're just living in survival mode all the time.
Mm.
So obviously if you're in survival mode, you're not able to self-assess. So you don't know that you're in burnout.
That's why I think if you're talking about feeling burnt out, you're probably not.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're recognizing there's some signs that
the stuff you can do there and then.
Yeah, or that's led you to burnout before, or could be warning signs of burnout, then that's different. But if you're saying kind of, oh, I'm so burnt out, you're probably not.
Probably not.
I think, like you say, you often don't realise you were burnt out until you're better again.
Mm. Yeah. And it took me a long while. A, to get better again, and B, to realise it.
And, you know, everyone experiences it differently, but that would be my sense of it.
Mm. So it's interesting that we've kind of come back to burnout again.
Mm.
So, what do you think it's important to do as a coach? As a coach running their business to avoid burnout? Because certainly what I find is that when I'm struggling just with life, whether that's, you know, like hormones, as we were discussing off the call, or the family stress that's going on, I find it's always client creation and building networks and reaching, having the courage to reach out, that falls by the wayside, that feels I can't do.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering about how do we avoid that before it happens?
Yeah, it's a good question.
And does that resonate with you? Because actually that might not be your experience.
I think, again, I feel very lucky for BetterUp because that's provided some stability in the background to everything else that I work on. I do think there's a slowing down to speed up, though.
That's Rich Lipman, I think, isn't it?
Is it?
Well, I mean, it's just common sense, but yeah, I think he definitely talks about that.
Right. Yeah, I used to say it at work because I felt that we were just going, again, it comes back to impact for me, like a million miles an hour without really even having a map, let alone knowing where
you're going. Yeah.
And I think slowing down, you know, as coaches, hopefully we're able to sort of check in with ourselves and notice what's going on, what habits are changing, what red flags are appearing, and just sort of taking that temperature test and again, like when you think you don't have time for yourself, that's when you really need to make time for yourself. I think it's all linked, Ruth.
What, I know.
It's everything's
all perfectly linked. Yeah.
And it's much easier said than done, of course. When you're in it, it's really hard to see. Definitely. I think in some ways, old habits die hard. You know, even as a coach, there's still a tendency to like cram in as much as possible, because also working for yourself, what if it goes away tomorrow? Yeah. What if nobody wants the coach next month? And yeah, that kind of feast or famine.
Feast or famine. I was just about to say that. Yeah. Yeah. So then you kind of cram in, you load in your diary. But then you're knackered.
Yeah, I notice my energy is just gone, and I'm just not, I'm not present for clients. It's just much harder to be in the call rather than on the call.
Yeah, because you're tired or you're preoccupied and yeah. Okay. So I think let's finish on like, what are your hopes for your business this year?
My hopes would be to help lots more people. There's that word help, I'm aware of it. To be better conservation leaders. I think I really want to focus on growing that this year. It's really, I don't know, this call's kind of cemented that for me, you know, that impact word that keeps coming up and the passion that kind of brings up. So just remembering that.
What it gives you.
And it's also, it's not going to be where the money is. So I think there's, you know, there's that balance as well. There's not much funding on that side of things, but it is.
But if I was your coach, Tori, I'd ask, is that a story you're telling yourself?
Maybe. Maybe. Yeah. So my hope is to grow conservation coaching. I want to do two courses this year with like open groups, so people from any organizations can join, and to have more private clients as well. Because that's where I want to be this year, I think.
It's so nice to just, I love that you've like realized just talking about it on this call, like, because it's so obvious in your face, everything, like when you start talking about, you know, not just the conservation stuff, but that impact and enabling people to effectively have impact while still looking after themselves. So it's good, important work that you're doing.
Thank you. Am I allowed to ask you what your hopes are for your business this year?
Yeah, you are. Well, I need to finish my 100 invitations by the end of February.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I kind of set it back in October just because, you know, it's me and I can't just do New Year's resolutions. I do October resolution. So I've got some quite clear visions for what I want to achieve. Mainly just a full-time, like, week that isn't just based on one-to-one coaching. I want a mixture of facilitation, training, group coaching. I know I'm being a bit elusive about that, but I'm allowed to be. I'm the host.
I'll have to ask you more later. Host prerogative.
Yeah, I think to just, certainly for this year or as a January thing, to just keep going with the intentions that I've already set.
That's nice.
Yeah. And it's really just around, it's not negotiable, you know, this is what I'm doing and I'm going to do it really well. So I've just got to crack on.
Just got to do it now.
Just got to do it.
Just got to do it.
And if I know myself well enough, I will do it. So, so yeah. And I love that we're talking like it's like January resolutions, and actually it's probably going to be May or June when this comes out.
That's true.
But I'm already excited to listen to it, because like to think about listening to it in May or June is just gorgeous, you know, with the sun on our faces.
Hopefully on a beach somewhere, maybe.
Yes. Oh, well, I'm off to Lanzarote on the 10th of February.
So. Are you? Everyone's going to Lanzarote. I need to get on the Lanzarote.
Gorgeous. Oh, in fact, I've just remembered something that I will share with you about what I decided for this year.
Yeah.
Back in October. Is that I would like to create a life that I don't want to have that I don't need holidays from, but that allows for me to have a lot of holidays.
I love that.
That is basically what I'm doing this year.
The dream.
Yeah.
Living your best life.
Yeah. So I'm starting, as I mean to go on, with 7 days in Lanzarote on the 10th of February.
Oh, amazing.
Yes.
Oh, the weather will be good, I think.
Oh my God, it is. It's already like 24 degrees.
Yeah, apparently my hairdresser was telling me it was 27 degrees on Christmas Day in Lanzarote.
I mean,
or was it Tenerife? Anyway. Same part.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Well, thank you so much, Tori. I've had the best time and I could keep chatting for hours.
Thank you so much for having me on the podcast. It's been really nice to chat to you, Ruth.
You're more than welcome, and how lovely that this is where we are.
Yeah, thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Tori.
Hello, everybody. Robbie here. And just a few quick things to share with you before you go on to whatever else you've got going on in the rest of your day. And thanks for getting all the way to the end of this episode. I'm imagining that means you think that the work we're doing is important, and we think so too. That's why I want to tell you about three ways to support the Coach's Journey and help us continue to support coaches to create thriving businesses and to thrive as they do it. The first is to become a supporter of the show. So you give us a small amount of money each month and help us make more episodes and help those episodes reach more coaches. And in exchange, you get various benefits, and including becoming the first to know about future plans for the show and future guests and all that kind of thing. And you can do that at patreon.com/thecoachesjourney. The second is to join the Coaches Journey community. That's my flexible, affordable group coaching program for coaches. You pay between £20 and £100 a month and get access to a certain number of group coaching calls every year, plus some one-to-one time with me if you're a full member, and various other benefits. And of course, you get the chance to be connected to other amazing coaches on their journeys, including some of the host team. And all of the host team have been members of the community at different times in their journeys. You can join the Coaches Journey community at thecoachesjourney.com/community or on the Patreon page too. And lastly, if neither of those is right for you, please click subscribe or follow wherever you're listening to this podcast. That really makes a difference to us being able to continue to keep this show free. Thanks so much to everyone who supported the Coach's Journey over the years, but in particular, thank you to Alex Whitten, David Norris, Jessica Gem, Joey Owen, Ruth Saville, and Nandita Perrett for your ongoing support. Thank you too for listening, and we hope to have you back on the Coach's Journey with us sometime soon.